It's Monday, January 5th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Well, happy New Year, Stashers, and welcome to what I guarantee will be the best daily audio stash podcast of the year so far. Coming up on today's stash, we've got a visit with a musician originally from the Chicago area who's now moved to Los Angeles. You've heard him before here on the daily audio stash with his song, Smoke That Weed. It's Nice Peter who will be joining us today for an interview and for an extra special musical break. Also, we're taking one last look back at 2008 with the official Normal Top 10 Cannabis Reform Headlines of 2008. We also have to remind you to get politically active at two different websites. First, we want you to check out change.org, which is a nonprofit website that is presenting issues to the Barack Obama administration at the National Press Club later this month. Currently, legalizing the medical and recreational use of marijuana is the number one issue by your votes. We've got a widget up on our blog at stash.normal.org, so you can click on change.org and make your voice heard as well. And don't forget change.gov, the official Obama administration website, which is taking round two of its open for questions. And in the national security area, the number one question has to do with ending the drug war and addressing our rampant prison population. So check out both websites, change.org and change.gov. Now, in reference to that, I wanted to talk a little bit about a comment I received on the Stash blog regarding this change.gov question. Jillian says, there are 15 million regular smokers in the U.S. The fact that we can't rally just 10,000 of us to get online and vote this question into first place shows why marijuana is still not legalized. As a group, do we even have the political will to fight for this issue? And that's a sentiment I feel almost every day that ends with a Y. How can it be that everybody I know either smokes cannabis or completely supports my right to smoke cannabis, and yet we can't seem to muster the political will to do the common sense thing and just legalize cannabis? With 15 million regular smokers, this should be a piece of cake. Well, you gotta define regular.
Radical Thoughts with Radical Russ.
There are 40.6% of the population 12 or over who admit to using cannabis once. That's not regular. Three out of four of those are those experimenter types who are usually vocal marijuana opponents now. There are 10.1% of Americans who used within the last year, and some would call that regular. But your once-a-year types are the ones who do it on vacation or a special occasion like a concert, who get their little baggie or a couple of joints from that old college friend who they only call when they're looking for weed. Ask them to their face, they'll say, sure, legalize it. It'd be easier for their once a year, but really, they aren't investing the slightest in this issue because they need to maintain the I'm not a stoner label for work and family. Then, there's the 5.8% of Americans who use monthly. Is that regular? I'd like to think that it is, but again, The once-a-month guy is the kind who goes out and parties on the weekends, and every now and then, when someone's around with a doobie, he'll gladly partake. Weed is an enhancement to what they're doing. It's already not that hard to get, and they usually don't get into any trouble over it, so why expend much effort over it? I consider the 1.3% of us who use more than 300 days a year, the daily toker, if you will, to be the regular users of cannabis. Like I mentioned in an earlier post, that's about equal to the number of Puerto Ricans in America, which is good to visualize if you're on the East, or if you prefer, Native Americans in America, which works better out here in the West. Now, also consider that nobody will lose their job, their kids, their housing, their student loans, or their freedom by admitting Puerto Rican or Native American heritage. Subtract from that 1.3% those who choose to toke quietly and not rock the boat. Then remember that some of the 1.3% make their living dealing weed, and they don't want legalization because prohibited cannabis sets up an artificial price support they wouldn't dream of giving up. Then there are the rebellious, unique personalities within our 1.3% who don't want anything to do with the man or Babylon or the Matrix. Or they believed it's all rigged, it's hopeless, it's the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the New World Order, and they think that a click on a website's about as powerful as a fart in a hurricane. And then there are some daily cannabis consumers who do fit the Doritos-eating bong babysitter Cartoon Network critic stereotype. And then there are those among our 1.3% who are just some busy folks or not connected to the internet. When you finish all those subtractions, how much of that 1.3% remains? The dedicated, out and proud cannabis activists. Let's be generous and say half of all near daily consumers are dedicated activists. That's about the same number as Indian Americans in America. Me, I'd be thrilled if it was just 1 in 10 daily tokers, and that's about the same number as Native Pacific Islanders in America. Still, those aren't numbers easily dismissed. If half the regular cannabis consumers were active, that's about 1.5 million people. If it's only a tenth, it's still 300,000. I use the comparison to ethnic groups in America to drive home a point about thinking of ourselves as an invisible minority, and to consider how we approach messaging to the irregular or the non-daily cannabis consumers, as well as the cannabis neutral and the cannabis opposing people in the general public. For imagine, if police were racially profiling and arresting 872,721 Puerto Ricans or Native Americans on bogus charges every year, how would those communities react? How would they frame the message to Joe Sixpack White Dude, who's never going to be busted without good cause and doesn't even know any Puerto Ricans or Native Americans? Imagine if the propagandizing and stereotyping of Puerto Ricans or Native Americans was prevalent throughout government and media. How would they react? I don't have all the answers. What do you think? How do we best motivate and utilize the regular cannabis community in 2009? Leave your suggestions in the comments at our blog at stash.normal.org, and I'll read through and pass them along to the executive staff at Normal.
This has been Radical Thoughts with Radical Russ.
All right, folks, that's my New Year's message. Think about how we are portraying ourselves in the media and in public, and make your voice heard. It's time for an end to adult marijuana prohibition. Let's get on to it. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Schwarzenegger seeks education cuts from the Sacramento Bee. California schools could eliminate a week of instruction and increase class sizes next year under Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's new plan for solving the state's budget crisis. Vowing to give schools maximum flexibility to cut costs, the proposal unveiled Wednesday also would allow districts to eliminate one of two science courses required for high school graduation. Schwarzenegger's plan would provide no teacher salary increases, eliminate a program providing subsidies to overhaul low-performing schools, and suspend participation in a program encouraging teachers to obtain national certification. Students could see dramatic impacts from the governor's proposed $2.1 billion in education cuts this fiscal year and $3.1 billion from what schools anticipated in 2009-2010. Wow. It's a shame that the public school students are going to have to suffer. If only California could find a way to easily slash $981 million in police, judicial, and correctional budgets every year, and if only California could raise $105 million in new tax revenues every year, that would be more than half of the proposed $2.1 billion Schwarzenegger is cutting from education. You can educate children, or you can arrest and lock up potheads. You can't afford to do both. It's your call, Governor. And when we look around the United States, we see more states that are also considering major slashes to social services while they continue to prohibit cannabis. In New York, Governor Patterson will slash budget of center that helps abused children. Quote, "Everybody's going to feel the pain as a result of the budget cuts," end quote, Patterson said in December 2008. Patterson has been blunt about his budget, and after digging through the numbers herself, Deborah Merrifield, the executive director of the Joan A. Male Family Support Center, is feeling the pain. Said Merrifield, quote, "We could lose up to $1.1 million out of our relatively small $3 million budget, so that's a 35% cut," end quote. This support center prevents child abuse and neglect through different programs and a parent helpline. But the programs are in jeopardy of cutbacks and closings. On New Year's Eve, five people there were laid off. In New York, taxing and regulating cannabis similar to alcohol would save $565 million in police, judicial, and correctional budgets and raise $65.5 million every year. In New Jersey, Governor Corzine is proposing cutting $812 million from New Jersey's budget in response to estimates that the state's financial shortfall has leaped from $1.2 billion to $2.1 billion. The governor plans to raid the rainy day fund, use unspent money from the previous year's budget, freeze salaries of government workers, and use other measures, he said yesterday. He is also counting on at least $300 million in new federal aid. Cuts may include $90 million in discretionary spending, $15 million in municipal aid, $75 million in educational aid for kindergarten through 12th grade schools, and $160 million in the state's pension contributions. The state of New Jersey would save $197 million every year in police, judicial, and correctional budgets and raise $23.9 million in taxes every year from legalized cannabis. In Pennsylvania, Governor Rendell has announced several rounds of budget cuts and has proposed tapping the rainy day fund, diverting money from the sale of oil and gas drilling rights, and using federal aid to make up for a revenue deficit. The state revenue department yesterday released figures showing Pennsylvania's general fund taking in 6.8% less than expected for the fiscal year that ends June 30th. Projected for the entire year, that would leave a $2 billion deficit in Pennsylvania's $28.3 billion budget. In Pennsylvania, there would be savings of $198 million every year from the judicial, police, and correctional budgets, and $34.9 million every year raised in taxes from the sales of legalized cannabis. Why head shop raids are unfair and unjust. Normal board member Norm Kent tells the story of a reefer-mad mayor of Key West, Florida, bringing in the federal agents to raid the head shops in his town. These merchants had been operating in Key West openly and legally for years. Moti Alfasi, an Israeli by birth, is one of those businessmen whose inventory was seized. Having lived in Key West for a decade, he loves the atmosphere and the community of the island, but his head is spinning over what happened to him. Here is what he told local reporters, quote, "I don't understand America. They gave me a license in Key West. I paid my taxes. I obeyed the law. Florida said it was okay to sell the things. But now people from Immigration and Customs Enforcement and federal agents from the Drug Enforcement Administration come in and take everything away from me without even a notice to remove it first." End quote. It's more than that, Moti. You detrimentally relied on the representations of Key West City representatives that you could lawfully do what you were doing. Day by day, hour by hour, Key West City Police patrolled your business, and no one told you that you could not do what you were doing. You have been operating openly and legally for years. You paid your taxes. You had an occupational license. You employed your neighbors. Now you got screwed. Norm notes how all these seizures are done without any warrant or judicial approval, as the items are deemed to be drug paraphernalia by the feds, even though they don't actually have to prove the items were actually drug paraphernalia. Any business owners who threaten to challenge the legality of the seizures and the return of their inventory are threatened back with federal drug prosecutions and mandatory minimum sentences if they don't keep their mouth shut. The federal law in question here is this. Title 21, Chapter 13 of federal law states, quote, "Drug paraphernalia means any equipment, product, or material of any kind which is primarily intended or designed for use in manufacturing, compounding, converting, concealing, producing, processing, preparing, injecting, ingesting, inhaling, or otherwise introducing into the human body a controlled substance," end quote. But in Section F, there's this nice little list of exceptions. This section shall not apply to any person authorized by local, state, or federal law to manufacture, possess, or distribute such items, or any item that, in the normal lawful course of business, is imported, exported, transported, or sold through the mail or by other means, and traditionally intended for use with tobacco products, including any pipe, paper, or accessory. So what we have here is a law questioning the primary intention of a pipe, but exempting pipes with a traditional intention of smoking tobacco. So then, how does anybody go about legally creating a new kind of tobacco pipe? Tradition tells me that Sherlock Holmes' curved pipe or Popeye's corncob pipe, I guess, are okay for tobacco or spinach. But suppose I create a new pipe for tobacco. How can anything new be traditional? Suppose further that in the interest of making my new tobacco pipe easier to clean, I design it from glass rather than wood or plastic. Then, to protect my tobacco-smoking users from tar, I give this pipe a large chamber for percolating the tobacco smoke through water. Unless I can sell my new, easy-clean tobacco water pipe to some customers over a period of time, it is never going to become anyone's tradition to use it that way. These stores go to great lengths to sell innovative new tobacco smoking devices and accessories. They post large signs that say, "For tobacco use only." They ask for people's IDs, and they don't serve the underaged. They kick people out of the store if they even mention the word bong. The feds can say it's a wink-wink nudge-nudge game everyone's playing, that the buyer and the seller all know that the tobacco products are being used for something else, But how do you prove that in a court without mind-reading technology? Well, the point of Norm's article is that you don't. These federal agents come in and seize the inventory based on their own opinion that something is primarily intended for drug use, and they don't have to prove that in court. You have to prove that your property was intended for some other primary use, or that it is traditionally used for tobacco, and if you try to prove that, they'll charge you with selling drug paraphernalia and cost you even more time, money, and freedom than you've already lost, even if you win your case. And it's a fruitless endeavor anyway. All you do when you shut down a head shop is increase the sales of plastic Honey Bear bottles and surgical tubing, or toilet paper rolls and tinfoil, or apples and Bic pens. Hey, that's an idea. Rather than opening a head shop, open a Build-A-Bong store. You sell chambers, posts, screens, tubes, pieces and parts, but then the customer has to assemble it at home. Hey there, Stashers. How would you like to win a 6-night trip to the most cannabis-friendly spot on Earth? That's right, a trip to Amsterdam for four, sponsored by the Normal Foundation. It's an exciting new fundraiser for our organization, partnering with Win for Charity to help us raise money so we can provide programs and services to normal members like you. Win for Charity is an online hosting solution for charitable organizations that allows us to harness the power of the internet to increase our fundraising ability. How do you win? Simple. Just go to www.winforcharity.com/normal. That's win, the number four, charity.com/NORML. Click your buy ticket now button, then just select normal as your charity. The vacation package includes 6 nights in an Amsterdam city hotel, including breakfast, entrance to the Rijksmuseum, and a canal bus day pass, round-trip airfare, private transfers from airport to hotel and hotel to airport, a full-day tour to Delft, The Hague, and Madurodam, and a full-day tour to the windmills and Volendam. Get your tickets now at winforcharity.com/normal. Your ticket helps to support our organization, and you could win 6 nights in Amsterdam. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the largest grassroots drug law reform organization in America. So every Monday we visit with the activists in drug law reform who are fighting for our freedom. Get motivated to get it regulated. Join us in some political activism today. You can start by visiting norml.org. The year in review. Normal's top 10 events that shaped marijuana policy. Number 10. Normal Daily Audio Stash gains record listenership. Popularity of Normal's podcast grew significantly in 2008, topping more than 110,000 downloads in the month of October alone. Said host Russ Belville, quote, "When it comes to the subject of marijuana, more and more people are turning away from the federal government and away from the mainstream media. Instead, they are turning to groups like Normal and the Normal Daily Audio Stash as their most trusted source of information for all things cannabis." End quote. Number 9. California Attorney General issues guidelines recognizing patients' medical cannabis use. State and local law enforcement should not arrest state-qualified patients who possess, cultivate, or travel with medical marijuana, according to guidelines issued in August by the California Attorney General's office. The guidelines also permit for the distribution and nonprofit sales of medical cannabis permitted by qualified collectives and cooperatives. Number 8. Medical marijuana use not associated with adverse side effects. The medical use of cannabis is not associated with serious negative side effects, according to a meta-analysis published this summer in the Journal of the Canadian Medical Association. Number 7. Teen pot use declines in states with medical cannabis laws. States that have enacted legislation authorizing the use of medical cannabis by qualified patients have not experienced an increase in the drug's use by the general population, according to a comprehensive report issued in June by the Marijuana Policy Project. Number 6. Cannabis determined to be less harmful than alcohol. The potential health risks associated with cannabis are less than those associated with alcohol and do not justify the continued criminalization of the plant or its users, according to a report published in October by the Beckley Foundation, an independent British think tank that analyzes drug use and drug policy. Number 5. Marijuana arrests for 2007 reach all-time high. Police arrested a record 872,721 Americans for marijuana violations in 2007, the highest annual total ever reported by the FBI. Since 1965, over 20 million Americans have been arrested for violating state or federal marijuana laws. Number 4. Marijuana exceptional at reducing MRSA. The administration of natural plant cannabinoids significantly reduces the spread of drug-resistant bacteria, including methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, according to a study published this fall in the Journal of Natural Products. MRSA is responsible for over 18,000 hospital stay deaths each year. Number 3. California courts rule medical pot statutes don't conflict with federal anti-drug laws. State provisions allowing for the possession and use of medical marijuana do not conflict with federal anti-drug laws, according to a series of California court rulings. In two separate cases, the California Supreme Court refused to hear challenges to the state's 12-year-old marijuana law, finding that counties are obligated to issue identification cards to qualified patients and that police cannot seize marijuana from state-sanctioned medical pot users. Number 2. Members of Congress demand an end to federal pot possession arrests. Members of Congress convened a Capitol Hill press conference in July to demand lawmakers enact legislation to eliminate the government's authority to arrest and prosecute adults who possess marijuana. Lawmakers called on colleagues to endorse H.R. 5843, which sought to remove federal penalties for the possession and nonprofit transfer of marijuana by adults. The legislation was the first proposal introduced in Congress in 30 years to eliminate criminal marijuana penalties. And the number one event, as determined by Normal, that shaped marijuana policy in 2008? Landslide at the ballot box. Election Day voters reject Bush drug war doctrine. Millions of Americans nationwide voted on Election Day for marijuana law reform, approving 9 out of 10 ballot measures to liberalize penalties on cannabis use and possession. In Massachusetts, where 65% of voters decided to reduce marijuana possession penalties to a $100 fine, and Michigan, where 63% of voters approved legalizing the medical use of cannabis, supporters for pot law reform outnumbered supporters for President-elect Barack Obama. And those are the top 10 events that shaped marijuana policy as determined by Normal in the year 2008.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500. So enter early and enter often.
I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check NORML.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Always fun here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash to talk with some of the musicians and artists who help the growing fight against adult marijuana prohibition by submitting their music and artwork and other creations for those of us here in the cannabis community to enjoy. And I'm really happy to be speaking with one such musician down in Los Angeles, California, who goes by the name of Nice Peter. And welcome to the show.
Hello.
You know, we had played one of your songs before, and I had joked at the time that Nice Peter sounds like a compliment at a porno set. How did you come up with that name?
Well, I used to play at a hip-hop open mic in Chicago. That's where I started playing music. And they used to call me Pete Nice at this open mic. I guess he was a hip-hop artist in the 80s.
Yeah.
One night when I was kind of forming a band and I kind of wanted to have a different name, my real name is Peter, they called me Nice Pete, just kind of by accident. I was like, that's kind of got a good ring to it.
Yeah.
So I went home and I looked up NicePete.com, and somebody already had that. But NicePeter.com, nobody had bought. I thought it kind of had that porn ring to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was, I liked it, so we stuck with it.
Hey, I think it's great. So the website is NicePeter.com, correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that inadvertent plug for my website.
You betcha. Hey, and there's, you know, a lot of tradition to successful musicians having those kind of porno names. I mean, you got Steely Dan and 10cc and Love and Spoonful and Hole, I guess.
I never even thought of the Love and Spoonful as being a sexual innuendo.
Yeah, that's exactly where it comes from, just like 10cc. But how long have you been performing in the LA area now?
Well, I just moved here just a few weeks ago.
Oh, really? So you've been performing in the Midwest before that?
Yes. I was in Chicago for 8 years.
Okay.
And then I kind of flipped out one day, and I went off to England for a couple of months, and I was playing over there. I did like a six-week tour over there. And then when I came back, I decided I didn't really want to be in Chicago anymore. So I drove across the country from Chicago to New York, and then New York down the east coast of Florida, and then Florida all the way across to California.
Oh, right on. So what do you say are your major influences on your music?
Well, I guess comedian-wise, it'd be Steve Martin and a guy named Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
A surprising number of people haven't heard of him, but he kind of really paved the way for pretty much everybody to say what they want and not face legal consequences.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce famously was arrested, I don't remember if it was the late 50s, early 60s, for obscenity charges, I believe it was.
Yeah. He spent basically the whole second half of his career fighting obscenity charges.
Yeah.
And then after he died, they pretty much stopped that.
Yeah,
and that really paved the way for like George Carlin.
Right.
And pretty much everybody, and then down to, you know, foul mouth singers like me.
So your music does have kind of mostly a comedy edge to it then?
It does. It kind of started by accident. I moved to Chicago to pursue improv comedy. And I went to this open mic one night, and I had this kind of funny song I'd written, and I played it, and the reaction was so strong, and people said, oh, you got to come back next week. So I said, well, I better write a new song. So I wrote another song, went back next week, and it just kept happening like that. And before you know it, I was playing 5 open nights a week, just writing all the time, and just took off from there, I guess.
Oh, cool. Now, how does cannabis or the cannabis community influence you in your art?
Well, that's multifaceted, I guess. I've been a smoker since since college. That's when I really started, you know, me and my friends would sit around and we'd get high and we'd play music and just start making up songs that made us laugh. And so that was kind of, you know, my foundations of musical creativity. And then since then, I see the pot and the cannabis culture I'm not sure how to put this across, but when I sing about pot on stage, it really kind of frees people up, and people mm-hmm. kind of, you know, a lot of people in the room might have different opinions about politics, about this and that and that, but when I start singing about weed, it really brings people together,
yeah.
which is surprising, but the bar crowd that I play for generally, they generally all at least smoke pot or used to, and I'll sometimes ask that, like, how many smokers do we have in the audience? I'll see a certain amount of hands. How many people used to smoke don't do it anymore, and I'll see a certain amount of hands. And it really just kind of lets people let their guard down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot.
I've often found that music and comedy allows people to express and get into an issue that they may not discuss around the dining room table or amongst their friends or coworkers. So like I say, it's a big contribution that artists make to this community, because you guys can get on stage and talk about it where most people wouldn't. Do you think
that? Yeah, and I'm not supposed to do this, but I've even been on a college campus in front of like 500 kids, and I'll say something like, I know we're not supposed to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it because I saw two kids smoking in the hallway on the way here. And it's not something you're supposed to acknowledge publicly, but I don't know. I've never been afraid of it. I've never been afraid about talking about it. It doesn't please my parents too much, but that eventually broke them down a little bit too.
Well, that's cool. So you're a transplant from the Midwest to Los Angeles. I imagine it's been quite an eye-opener in the difference between the two cannabis communities.
Oh, my God. I went up to Northern California.
Oh, no.
I stayed with some hippies in their treehouse.
Okay.
They had a regular house, and it had this like treehouse guest house thing. And that's where I stayed. And when I went to their house, they just had like jars of grass just all over the house. I literally had to brush little pieces of grass off the couch, like,
yeah.
sit down, just loose pieces of bud.
I know.
I've never seen anything like it.
I know, it's amazing. I'm originally from Idaho, a pretty, conservative area of the country where,
yeah.
I remember if we used to roll a joint and we'd get a fleck of leaf, you know, on our shirt, we'd pick it up with a pair of tweezers, you know, we had to hold on to that. Now out here in Portland, Oregon, it's like, just brush that off.
I haven't been fortunate enough to come up to Portland yet, and I'd really like to. I hear wonderful things.
No, we'll get you up to Portland. We can get you up there for the Global Marijuana March at the beginning of May. We have a whole square that we rent out, and we have music. Musicians and artists out there—that might be something we could talk about later.
Fantastic! That would be fantastic. It has been a fun little journey. Like I said, I played all over the Midwest, and then I was doing these England tours. I've been doing those for a few years, and I do sing about pot in pretty much all my shows. It's a part of my life. It's something I do. You know, half of my songs I probably started writing while I was stoned and got an idea. And it's amazing to see a response from people, like older people, younger people, coming up to me and either asking me if I want to smoke or just giving me some as a present because they know I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally every show, somebody will either ask me if I want to go smoke with them, and it gives you a chance to really talk to people, and it's just kind of cool. It breaks down some barriers. And
yeah.
Gives people, it's almost like a little cultural exchange.
Oh, yeah. I was doing a story the other day where someone had posited this idea that heavy use of cannabis would lead to antisocial behavior, and I'm like, do you know anybody that smokes pot? I mean, come on. We meet each other all the time and talk.
Right, exactly. It's been the basic of my social circle for a long time now. You know, I hang out with smokers, and it's not like that's all I hang out with, but we get together and we smoke from time to time.
Sure, sure thing. So the website is nicepeter.com, and we're speaking with Nice Peter here, and I want to give you a chance to, I know you're in the LA area, you got a show coming up, and so we got a lot of listeners down there in Southern California, so give them a chance to find out where you're going to be.
Well, I'm going to be at a bar called The Pig and the Whistle. It is my first official gig here in Los Angeles. It's at 10 p.m., and the bar is on Hollywood Boulevard. I guess it's a kind of well-known place. It's pigandwhistle.com. It's 6100-something Hollywood Boulevard. It's near the Sunset Strip there. It's Friday, January 9th.
Okay.
And I promise to sing at least two songs that involve marijuana usage.
All right. Well, everybody get out there to the Pig and Whistle on Friday the 9th. Check out the website, pigandwhistle.com, or check out nicepeter.com. I'm sure he'll have the information.
All the information's up there. You can download some songs. I believe the song Smoke That Weed. I'll tell you what. I'll put it up on my website so people can download it. That was the song I believe you played on
yep.
the podcast before. So
yep, Smoke That Weed. And we'll get some new ones from you here to play here in just a second, too. All right.
Fantastic.
Well, Nice Peter, thanks for joining us from LA, and we hope to get you up to Portland sometime, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I got me a job at a rundown diner, making good tips, and it couldn't be finer, till some lady said that I was being rude. She said my soup's too hot and my coffee's cold, and I said, man, that's because you're old. And I decided right there to spit something in her food. So I found a plate and I hocked something in it. Wouldn't you know that at just that minute, the manager was coming around that curve. He said, boy, you just must be crazy, not to mention dumb and lazy. I gave that fat bitch just what he deserved. I said, I quit, you fat motherfucker. You can take this job and shove it up your ass. I said, I quit, you fat motherfucker. I'm going home and I'm smoking grass. Well, we all gotta work just to stay alive, and everybody's working that 9 to 5. And working, man, it sure can make you sick. When you've been working 5 years in the same damn place, and the boss keeps screaming in your goddamn face, and you wanna tell that asshole to suck your dick. Stand up for yourself and be a man. You can do it, anybody can. Give that fat man a big fat piece of your mind. Tell him that you wanna raise, and if he laughs right in your face, bend right over and show him you're behind. And say, I quit, you fat motherfucker. You can take this job and shove it up your ass. I said, I quit, you fat motherfucker. I'm going home and I'm smoking grass. Everybody's doing what they can, and we're all sick working for the man. So stand up straight and let your voice be heard. Sing this song and flip your boss the bird. Tell him I quit, you fat ass motherfucker. You can take this job and shove it up your ass. I said I quit, you big fat stinky like an old ass ham sandwich motherfucker. Oh, I'm going home and I'm smoking. Lord, I'm choking. Lord, I'm smoking grass. I'm smoking weed, 'cause I don't need your fucking job.
That's our good friend Nice Peter with the song I Quit, You Fat Motherfucker, which, well, all I can say is I'm glad there's no FCC on the internet. I really couldn't afford a $325,000 fine. Although after all these years of curbing my tongue for traditional radio, it is kind of nice to be able to play that and say that every now and then. Also, going to give you a twofer here from Nice Peter. He is currently leading in the votes at the 2008 Stashy Awards. Check out the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. You can vote on the top 10 songs that I picked from 2008. Here's Nice Peter with the song that I picked for number one, and so far the voters are agreeing with me. It's Smoke That Weed.
All day long, come on. See that green burning red. Smoke that shit till you drop down dead, come on. 'Cause the day was hard and your work was long, and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock, 'cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green. And smoke that weed, smoke that weed, smoke that weed. And it's good and it is your friend. Just make sure you take out them seeds and stems. Come on. So you're worried they might check your piss. I say quit that fucking job and hit this. Come on.
it's just, when I get high, I feel so awesome.
Somebody order a pizza now, come on. Somebody order a pizza now, come on. Somebody order a pizza now, come on. Somebody order a pizza and smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from President Nixon's 1972 National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse that concluded, quote, "Marijuana's relative potential for harm to the vast majority of individual users and its actual impact on society does not justify a social policy designed to seek out and firmly punish those who use it. This judgment is based on prevalent use patterns, on behavior exhibited by the vast majority of users, and on our interpretations of existing medical and scientific data. This position also is consistent with the estimate by law enforcement personnel that the elimination of use is unattainable," end quote. For 37 years now, we've known that it's time to end adult marijuana prohibition. Is it finally time that the politicians will listen to us? Only if we keep our voices up. So yell out to your representatives, it's time to legalize. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here in 2009. Take care of each other, tokers.